content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. It is underwritten by the law firm of Narron Wenzel with offices in Raleigh and Smithfield and by our friends Mary and David Stevens. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host and producer for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Reading Service Studio of North Carolina. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics to champion your legal rights so that you can obtain equal access and full participation in our community and achieve your goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies, as well as from nonprofit organizations that promote information on law supporting independent living. And in today's episode, my guest is Katie Hartsaw. Katie, thanks for rejoining our Legal Matters program.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
We're so glad to have you. In fact, you were one of my first guests about 3 years ago.
I didn't know that.
Yes, you were one of my first guests, and I think it was approximately this time of year. Katie is an authority on Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which has to do with public accommodations. So we're very glad, and she is my go-to person when I have questions myself under the ADA. So, Katie, thanks so much for joining us. And first of all, Katie, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little biographical information, and then your professional progression. You've made a change recently.
I have. So I have been a lawyer here in North Carolina for 15 years. I practice primarily in the area of employment and education law, but we do a lot of discrimination work, which is how I got involved with the Title III of the ADA type cases. I was formerly with a firm called Cranfield, Sumner & Hartsaw, which is a large law firm in North Carolina, and I recently decided to make a change and go with a much smaller law firm. My husband and I started a firm earlier this year called Hartsaw Law Group, and we have five attorneys, and right now we are in Cary, North Carolina, and so we are enjoying that very much.
Well, did your father-in-law join you as well?
He sure did. Okay. So my father-in-law, Dan Hartsaw, started Cranfield, Sumner & Hartsaw 25 or 26 years ago, and he's come with us too and is helping us out, and we really appreciate it.
Well, I know both your father-in-law and your husband, fine fellows, great lawyers. You are a great lawyer also, so I think the sky's the limit for your firm.
So, well, I hope so, and I appreciate that.
Congratulations. Well, today, I call this our holiday edition of Legal Matters because we're right on the cusp of, if not in the middle of the Christmas season and shopping. We call it the Christmas season, even though the festivities and the decorations seem to come out before Halloween these days. But and here we are before Thanksgiving. But so our focus is going to be, first of all, on shopping in brick-and-mortar places. And but first of all, to put the ADA in a context for us, we got three titles. Just tell us a little bit about what all the titles are.
Well, so Title I of the ADA applies to employers, and it prohibits employers from discriminating against individuals with disabilities in the employment context. Title II generally applies to municipalities and governmental entities and prohibits them from discriminating against any person with a disability. And Title III generally applies to places of public accommodation, and that's any place of public accommodation, including restaurants, malls, stores, libraries, you name it, it applies. And so that requires places of public accommodation to make their facilities accessible to people with any sort of disability.
So it's always struck me as, I don't know whether the word is peculiar or not, but they call it public accommodations, and we think of accommodations as hotels and places where you might spend the night, and those are included in Title III, aren't they?
Correct. Those are included in Title III, but and you're right. It, it does sound like it applies to hotels, but it's really a lot broader than that. And the courts have interpreted this law just about as broadly as possible. And so it applies to just about any place that you can conceivably think of that you would visit and try to access their goods and services.
Particularly this time of year, you want to go out and shop. And when you go out and shop, you will probably try to get something to eat at a restaurant. So it's places that you would shop and places that you would dine. So it's a broad array of places that Title III applies to.
Sure. And if you go to the movies, it applies to that. Or if you want to see a play, it applies to theaters as well. So just about anywhere you can think of.
And places of athletic contest also.
Correct. Recreational facilities, ballparks.
So, well, give us a sketch of what Title III is all about, Katie. What is required of businesses that are subject to Title III?
So, under Title III, the Department of Justice has implemented what is called the ADAG, which is our accessibility guidelines, and that tells places of public accommodations exactly what they need to do to make their accommodation accessible. And so that includes things like making their parking lots accessible, including handicap spaces, including crosswalks, making their parking lots flat, making sure that they have ramps to get to sidewalks, making sure that their sidewalks are flat, making sure that their doorways are wide enough so that folks who are in wheelchairs can get through the doorway, making sure that their restrooms are accessible, making sure that their toilets are the right height, making sure that they have grab bars in restrooms, doing things like making sure that the sinks are accessible and are the right height, making sure that folks can access paper towel dispensers, things like that. In restaurants, it includes things like making sure that there are tables that are accessible so that folks can go in and have a place to sit down and eat. It includes making sure that where there are countertops at restaurants, that those are accessible for folks with disabilities. So it really covers the gamut of allowing folks with disabilities the ability to equally access the facilities and enjoy the goods and services that are provided therein.
That's a great synopsis. So let's take it step by step, maybe. So we drive to the mall, or we drive to the shopping center, or a particular place of business. Handicap spaces, is that part of ADA Title III?
Well, sure it is.
Okay.
And so, you know, what you're looking for is you need to make sure you know how to find a handicap space. So they need to have a sign showing you where the space is. They also need to have the painting on the asphalt showing you which space is the handicap space. And then from there, they need to have van accessible spaces so that folks that access the building with a van can get in and out. And from there, they need to have a crosswalk showing patrons where to go once they get out of their vehicle, how to get into the store or the restaurant or the movie theater.
My observation is that malls and shopping centers are pretty good about that, that you can find the handicapped parking there. How about on city streets and municipal streets? And I mean, go to a downtown in most any city or town, and we've got retail places that our listeners might want to access. So does Title III address parking on city streets, or is that more of a Title II issue, or where does that fall in?
That's more of a Title II issue, because individual places of public accommodation can't really regulate the city streets. However, a lot of times in cities, that's addressed by having the handicap spaces close to things like elevators inside of a parking facility. It's in a downtown area. So that's often a way that cities address those issues.
So that if our listener went downtown in their city wanted to go to a particular place of business, it's not the business's fault if there's not a handicap space within proximity to it. That's don't jump up and down and get angry at store owner, but that's more of a municipal thing. We got to take it to City Hall. So.
Right.
Okay. So we've arrived. We've found what happens if somebody has taken the handicap space and doesn't have a handicap sticker or something on the rear view mirror? Is there anything that a handicapped person can do under those circumstances?
Well, they can report it to the place of accommodation to see if the place can handle it themselves, or that they can, of course, call and report it to the authorities as well if there's someone who's not validly parked in a handicapped spot.
That's really a police matter, isn't it?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's against the law to park without authorization in a handicapped space, and that is one time where you can call the law. So,
right.
Okay. So we exit our car or our van, and now the curb can be an impediment. So what is the law about having handicap access to the sidewalk from the parking lot?
Well, the law is that they're supposed to have a ramp, and the ramp is supposed to be calibrated so that it's not too high and so that you can easily get up on the sidewalk. So there are specific regulations in place that tell businesses how they need to build the sidewalk so that the ramps are the right height.
So, okay. So we get up on the sidewalk and we get to the door. Doors can be an issue under Title III as well, can't they?
Well, and there are regulations about how doors should be made, and sometimes you'll see they'll have the handicap button that can be pushed so that the door will automatically open. If that's not in place, the doors are supposed to be calibrated so that they're not too heavy and so that they can be easily opened by people with disabilities.
The two issues with doors, I guess. One is the width of the doors, and that's more of a wheelchair access issue, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How about things that you can trip over?
Well, those are supposed to be eliminated as well, or at least made as accessible as possible to eliminate that issue for folks that have disabilities.
Okay, and so we get into the place of business where we're going to shop or where we're going to dine. I think the issues a lot of times come up more in places where you dine or sandwich shops and fast food restaurants. What are some of the impediments that the owners of those accommodations have to watch out for?
Well, they need to make sure that the tables are accessible and the countertops are accessible, and that they're the right height, and that it seems that the issue mainly arises with folks in wheelchairs. They need to be able to slide underneath the table, mm-hmm. And have access there.
And restrooms also. I mean, there are issues about the restrooms as well, aren't there?
Right. So the restrooms are supposed to be built so that people with wheelchairs can get into the restroom, that the hallways or doorways are wide enough so that the wheelchair can get into the restroom and can turn around in the restroom. And then there are all sorts of regulations about the height of the toilet, the height of the sink, the height of the paper towel dispensers, and all of those things.
Okay, so we've arrived, we've taken care of matters of personal comfort, and now it's time to get our food and our drink. What sort of regulations apply there?
Well, so some of the regulations that businesses have to consider are things outside of the physical aspects of the space. So they also need to think about their policies and procedures. So, for example, if someone who's visually impaired comes to a restaurant, they need to think about whether that person can read their menu, or whether their menu, they should have a braille menu or a menu with enlarged font size, or whether they should have a method whereby someone could see who might need extra light. Maybe they give out flashlights, or maybe they seat those people in areas with increased lighting, those sorts of things.
Okay. So.
Or maybe they just decide to read the menu to the person. That's another avenue.
Right.
They just need to be flexible in meeting the person's needs who's there.
Right. And are service animals a Title III issue? Or?
Well, certainly. So even in places where pets are not allowed or animals are not allowed, they need to allow people who have service animals to access the place with their service animal.
And when we say service animal, are we talking about a wide range of creatures, or is it limited?
Well, that's an interesting concept in today's legal world. And typically you think of service animals like dogs who help folks with, you know, limited visibility or vision, the ability to access the place of public accommodation. But in today's world, people have emotional support animals, and they are requesting that those animals be allowed. And that has been a subject of litigation recently as to whether places of public accommodation can prohibit those animals from entering.
Do you want to get into that a little bit? I mean, like a, you know, I can see somebody coming in with a boa constrictor, but we'll leave that for another day. But
the issue has primarily been litigated in the context of flights, where mm-hmm. people want to bring their animal onto a flight, and these have been animals that have typically not been recognized as service animals. They're
right.
More the emotional support type animals.
Right. That really gets to be more of a fair housing issue, doesn't it?
And, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that'll be the subject of another program later on down the road. But okay. Well, so it seems to me that the biggest issues have to do, I mean, the multiplicity of issues have to do with dining places, but are any particular issues that come up in retail sales kinds of businesses?
Well, sure. Some of the similar issues with retail businesses, such as they need to have the bathrooms accessible, and they need to have their countertops accessible. Some of the other issues that come up are making sure that people in wheelchairs can get through the aisles, that they can access things that might be high. So that could entail, you know, having someone come assist them to get items that can't be reached, or if it's someone with a vision impairment, them having the ability to ask someone for help in finding items, or ask someone for help in reading the price of an item. Those sorts of things are things that places of public accommodation need to consider.
Okay. So, okay, well, we've talked about brick and mortar kinds of accommodations, and just by way of background, we've talked to our listeners a little bit about the Robles versus Domino's case in the past, but we'd like to get your input about Robles versus Domino's, and of course, well, tell us a little bit about when we say Robles versus Domino's. Tell our listeners what that case is about.
So sure. So that case originates out of a case against Domino's involving whether their website was accessible. So the Department of Justice has said that their regulations require that websites be accessible. However, the Department of Justice has not actually implemented any guidelines or regulations telling businesses what it means for their website to be accessible, or what they're required to do in order for their websites to be accessible. So it's left businesses in sort of a conundrum where they know that their website's supposed to be accessible, but they're not exactly sure what to do to comply with the law in that regard. And so in the Robles case, the defendant argued that because these guidelines weren't in place or hadn't been put in place by the Department of Justice, that in essence their due process rights were being violated because they hadn't been told by the government what they were supposed to do to comply with the ADA as far as their website was concerned. And so they filed a motion to dismiss at the district court level, and that motion was granted. And the plaintiff appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit reversed. And so the defendant then appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the case. And so, in essence, what that means is that across the country, different courts have held different things with regard to the requirements for website accessibility, and it has left businesses in the situation of not knowing what the law is or what they're required to do. What is clear is that courts are certainly moving in the direction of requiring accessibility with websites. And so businesses are, at the very least, on notice that it's the best policy and the best practice to have their website be accessible. And so there's been a movement across the country for businesses to find out what they need to do to make their websites accessible to people with disabilities and how they can do that.
And of course, Domino's, I'm trying to think if I've ever actually walked into a Domino's.
That's a good question. There's not much of a reason to do that if you can order online or call them up and order a pizza and have it delivered.
So Domino's, I guess they do have brick-and-mortar places where they actually make the pizzas and deliver them out of, or where you can actually pick them up. And
sure.
The phrase, the nexus theory, having you've got a website and it has a nexus to a brick and mortar place. And so was that a key issue in the Robles case?
That was a key issue in that case, but courts across the country have held different things about whether the nexus is required. So, for example, you know, it's interesting because I looked at North Carolina law on this issue before today. And for whatever reason, there haven't been any filings in North Carolina on website accessibility. However, in the Fourth Circuit, there have been some cases out of the circuit courts in Virginia, or the district courts in Virginia. And the district courts in Virginia have held that the nexus is required, which means that the ADA only applies to a business's website if a patron could get something on a website that they could not get in a brick or mortar location. And so it's been a hard finding in North Carolina, or in courts in this part of the country, whereas courts in different parts of the country have held that that nexus is not required. So the law is in flux in this area, and because the Supreme Court declined to hear the Domino's case, there's probably not going to be a ruling on that for some time.
So the nexus, so at least in California, you would not have to you would have to have some sort of a brick-and-mortar place where the goods and services come out of, theoretically, anyway. And if we're going to California, and are there businesses that have no brick and mortar but just are totally proceed out of websites? I mean, is that
you're
going to have to help me with that, because I'm a 20th century guy.
Well, one great example of this are streaming services like Netflix. So, for example, there was some significant litigation against Netflix because a plaintiff claimed that Netflix hadn't provided closed captioning for all of the content on its website, meaning there were things that people with disabilities couldn't access equally because the closed captioning hadn't been provided. And so even with the Netflix cases, there were different opinions by different courts on whether that nexus was required. And so what Netflix ultimately decided to do was to settle and to provide the closed captioning on its content.
So they threw in the hand. They didn't stand on the nexus theory. They decided to accommodate.
Right, exactly.
Okay. And so then the state of the law in North Carolina is up in the air. We've got some cases out of Virginia. They're not Fourth Circuit cases, I take it.
Fourth Circuit cases. They're just district court cases out of Virginia.
Okay. So as we and of course people will over the holidays are going to want to watch movies. So Netflix has had a 21st century attitude about about this issue and is accommodating. So
they are. And, you know, I think the good thing about this is that most businesses share that view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole point of the internet for businesses is to sell more goods and services. And so the more customers they can reach, the better that is for them. And so the good thing, I think, is that businesses are recognizing that it is an issue for everybody if their website is not accessible. And so the more that they can do to make their site accessible, the better that is for everybody.
So an economic-driven and an Adam Smith kind of attitude about this would be to accommodate and open up goods and services and not have a cramped and crabbed attitude about
right.
this. So here I know enough to be dangerous, but I'm going to refer to Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, WCAG. I guess that's not really a gold standard, but it's or even a legal standard. But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, so those were guidelines that were suggested back in 2010. And in 2017, the DOJ decided not to go forward with requiring those guidelines. But it is a place for businesses to start to look if they have questions about, where should we start with this process of making our website accessible? What does it mean to make our website accessible? What can we do to make it accessible? And that's just a good place for them to start if they have questions about it, but it's not a legal requirement at this time.
So it's a point of reference and a resource and not a legal, I won't say barrier or a legal standard, but it's just a good starting point.
Sure.
Okay. Well, Katie, anything else you want to add here? And as we're wrapping up, have we covered pretty much everything? Or
I think we have, and I'd just like to say that I appreciate you having me here today, and that I hope that all of the listeners enjoy the holidays and that they're able to access all of the goods and services that they need to and want to access during the holiday season.
Well, thank you, Katie. I appreciate you coming. And, of course, we've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Please be sure to tune in next time on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. We broadcast the next day, Wednesday, at 7 a.m. We hope you've enjoyed the show and discovered information about your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in our community. I'm Joe Austin, your host and producer for North Carolina Reading Service. Legal Matters, and want to thank Katie Hartzog again for joining us and providing very insightful and informative program today. Thank you, Katie. The content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can readily find it as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode, or you wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, please call us at 919-832-5138. And you can also reach us by way of email at info@ncreadingservice.org. We look forward to hearing from you, and happy holidays. Thank you very much, Katie.